Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
When we go to guests, we love to get the guys who know what they're talking about. Heavy hitters. We have one right now. You can follow him on Twitter, at Basketball Talk. He's Kurt Helin. He is the lead NBA writer, managing editor at NBCSports.com. Kurt, good to have you with us.
Hey, Kurt.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, we appreciate it very much. I think everybody probably thinks the Cavs are capable of winning two straight games and beating the Boston Celtics. But what I'm stunned about, man, I can't believe the way that home court advantage has just dominated this series to the extent that it has. The closest game has been a 9-point game, Kurt. Is that stunning to you?
That is the thing that's been kind of by far the most surprising. And Cleveland, too, it certainly has been part of that. And Boston, it's like they're two different teams. I don't know if that's the youth and they're just inexperience and they just feel more comfortable at home. I don't know if this is I think it's something that started out probably just fairly random. Like, they didn't go into this playoffs thinking this way. It was just like they kind of, you know, they had a rough third game against Milwaukee and what have you. And now it's become the self-fulfilling prophecy that they're not so sure about themselves on the road. And then they're missing layups and they get home and, you know, Jason Tatum's putting on a cape and flying around. But both of the teams, it's been really strange. Obviously, Cleveland is going to have to break that dynamic to get back to the finals.
You think LeBron's tired?
Yeah, a little. I don't think it's going to affect his play as much in Game 6 and 7. I think that he will bring the appropriate level of you know, his appropriate fear, that the term that some of the coaches like to use. I would say some desperation's got to be in there. I mean, because obviously this is a backs against the wall situation, but I mean, led the league in minutes played. He's led the playoffs in minutes played during the postseason, and he's out there to load on him and what's expected and needed from him by this team on both ends of the floor. I mean, he takes some defensive times off, especially during the regular season, but so much is asked of him, so much is leaned on him that, yeah, I would imagine that at some point this does start to catch up with him a little bit. He's just less likely to show it than anyone else.
Kurt, you know, you always hear that adage in the NBA, well, you know, role players play well at home and they play poorly on the road. I must admit, I'm surprised that J.R. Smith and George Hill as a tandem have fallen into that. Because I didn't think either one of them would, based on their veteran, you know, years in the league and playoff experience. Because even though George Hill doesn't have an NBA title, George has played in 100 playoff games. I mean, he knows what this is all about.
Yeah, exactly. He's been down this road before. Smith has been a problem inconsistently at both ends. I mean, he's had better games at home, but they really talk about a guy they need to find himself and just be much more consistent on the road. He's been pretty bad in these games. I'm to the point where, honestly, if I'm Ty Lue, I'm thinking about starting Korver in front of him. And then I think George Hill's the bellwether to me, isn't he? At least he seems that way to me. Like, LeBron's going to do what LeBron does, and he's going to be, you know, we're talking about his off night last night or whatever, and he was ridiculously good. He just wasn't, you know, up to the kind of crazy standards he has set for himself and the bar that's there. But George Hill is the guy who's got to be a secondary shot creator for them, who can, you know, run some pick and roll, get some guys some looks, and help them kind of flow better offensively. And then he's a good defender, and he hasn't been consistently this series. And when you talk about the fatigue factor, to me, it's less LeBron. I'm not even worried about him as much as what happens with Korver and Hill and some of these other guys who are being asked to play a lot of minutes now as the rotations really get short in this series. So those are the guys to me that I think you'll get that from them in Game 6, but those are the guys who are really going to have a big Game 7 for them to have a chance.
All right, help me with Ty Lue in trying to figure out this rotation, because when they start the fourth quarter and LeBron's on the bench and Kevin's on the bench and, you know, he's talking about Ogilvy causing a problem for him because they didn't expect him to play less, or they expected him to play, so they could book Kyle. Like, I am dumbfounded by the rotation. I used to be dumbfounded by the fact that maybe they didn't have enough plays to run. And then it just hit me, there's no way they don't have enough plays to run. It's LeBron taking the ball and figuring out what he wants to do. But when it comes to coaching, and it was last night, for two games here against the Celtics, he looks great. And then last night, it's like, what in the world are you thinking?
Yeah, the Ojale comment was really strange. I mean, they did take him out. And by the way, when Korver's been on the floor without Ojale matched up on him, he hasn't. The Celtics haven't been nearly. I mean, Celtics. The Cavaliers haven't been nearly as good. Like, that has been a matchup they have really exploited, and Boston, you know, wisely went away from it and leaned heavily, more heavily on Aaron Baines in this game to kind of change the dynamic. But that was a look. You've got to get Korver out there. Was it 19 minutes? You've got to get him out there more than that, and you've got to get your best guys in their best positions to succeed. And I'm not sure we see that consistently from Cleveland, regular season or playoffs. They're able to get by on that for a while because LeBron, but especially without Kyrie Irving there to kind of cover that anymore. Like, you're going to have to put your guys in the best situations for them, and it just doesn't happen consistently.
Kurt Helan joining us. He's the NBA lead writer for NBCSports.com. You can follow him on Twitter at @BasketballTalk. Kurt, the general thinking in the NBA has been for a number of years now, really since LeBron went to Miami and joined up with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. All right, you have to have two, more than likely three, big-time players, superstar players together to have a chance to win. And you know, historically, Pat Riley sold that to LeBron, you know, with Bird, Mikhail Parrish, and all the guys he had with the Lakers and all that. And you've seen it. Other teams try to emulate that. And the Boston Celtics are blowing that theory right out of the water right now. How are they doing it?
Well, first off, I do think we sleep on the some of the talent they have. I mean,
they do have good talent, Kurt, no question. But
they don't have. You're right that they don't have, or if they do, that they're two superstar, potential superstar guys are, you know, wearing very nice, expensive suits on the sideline.
Right, and the guys who are in there are 19 and 20, 21 years old, yeah. And Brown and Tatum, who are terrific young players, but they're not there yet.
No, but I think the other thing that gets overlooked, especially as you get deeper into the playoffs and the cauldron gets hotter and some of the superfluous stuff gets, you know, melted away, it also comes down to holes. It comes down to weaknesses. It comes down to it's not just having the superstar. It's having pieces around them so that there's not obvious holes and gaps to attack. So that if you're going up against the Warriors, you're thinking, "Wow, we've got to attack Steph Curry." Steph Curry isn't a wretched defender. He's okay, but that's the weakest link. That's the guy we got to go at. And so in the case of Boston, this roster was really well constructed, and they don't really have these glaring, like, yeah, all right, you know what, we're going to take Terry Rozier and we're going to try to post him up, but they're kind of able to switch that occasionally and stay out of that too much. And there aren't the kind of holes where I think sometimes you look at the Cavs roster and you're Korver's out there and you've got to play him heavy minutes, but I can go at him. There's certain spots where I think, and he's actually played pretty good defense these playoffs, but there's spots I want to attack. And I'm not sure I think that's part of what Boston's advantage is that they don't have those holes. They don't have that obvious place to attack, and it takes something a little different to beat them.
Kurt Helan joining us, lead NBA writer for NBCSports.com. So this series is now 3-2 Celtics. Cavs are home, where the Celtics have been lousy. You know, they haven't been good on the road. Who wins Game 6? What happens in Game 7?
I like the Cavs in Game 6, although this is the one where I'm curious about the fatigue, but I think they win Game 6 in part because it's in the Celtics' head that they're not going to be as good on the road. And there's a natural tendency to let up where, you know, hey, we've got two games, we've got another one at home, versus Cleveland has to play with a level of desperation and fear and hey, we've got to do this. And I think at home they'll get that. Game 7, I think, is going to be tight. I think it's going to take – look, I think Boston – Game 7s get weird, right?
Yep,
I mean,
yep.
Everybody gets a little tight. Everything gets a little strange. You end up with Meta World Peace hitting game winners because he's not bothered by human fear in 2010 and all that stuff that bothers the rest of us. I think that that's where a role player can step up. And that's where, obviously, like, LeBron's going to have some moments in that game. But at Game 7, that's the kind of game J.R. Smith just goes off in. Or somebody, you know, something ridiculous happened. I don't want to say ridiculous because it's not like he's a bad player. But something somewhat unexpected we haven't
right.
seen all series that comes through. And I think that maybe Boston starts to freeze on that stage. That might be finally the stage where the rookies start to look like rookies, although they certainly did in games 3 and 4 too. So I think game seven's a toss-up, to be honest with you. Game sevens get so weird. I think it's a coin flip, and you could say it lands on Cleveland because of LeBron, but it also could land on Boston because they do bring that defense every game, and it does work for them.
Kurt, you say fatigue. Are we talking about fatigue about the team that's really old or the team that's only playing seven guys?
I think that both are going to battle some of that issue. Cleveland's older guys. I've had that question, but I think it's fair. Frankly, I think it's a big question to ask in the West too. When those teams are down to, you can't play Nick Young. You're struggling right out there in the West. It's the same thing in the East. Like all of a sudden you're like, well, I can't play Semi Ojeleye anymore. I've got to get him out because Korver's roasting him. But now my rotations are smaller, and I'm asking a lot. I mean, that's the most minutes Baines has played in a long time. How does he bounce back from that? I think it's a question for both sides, the conditioning and then the mental sharpness. It's easy to say at this point in the year you don't face mental fatigue, but, man, when every game is everything and you want to be dialed in, is there a point where some of these young players don't bring it? I mean, it's the fun part of the playoffs where these are the hard questions to answer that hinge on such small little things and could swing either way.
Kurt, appreciate your time today. Hope we can have you back talking Cavs and somebody in the NBA Finals. So, thank you.
Yeah, the West is. You think the East is a coin flip? Look at the West.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
I would love to do it, guys.
Appreciate it, Kurt. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Take care,
Kurt, the lead NBA writer for NBCSports.com, and you can follow him on Twitter @BasketballTalk.
Okay, picture this: it's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.